is, looks like council's ready. It's the Hall case, and we have Mr. Matthews and Ms. Darren.
Good morning.
Mr. Matthews, would you like to reserve some time for rebuttal?
2 minutes, please.
Certainly.
Good morning. There are two issues in this case, and I mean, I'm Gregory Matthews from Portsmouth representing Antonio Hall. There are two issues. There was no issue as to whether or not he actually took the stuff. That wasn't argued, thankfully, really at trial. There are two issues. The first issue regards the photograph in 192-270.1. And I suppose I should, as I read that code section and as I look at the facts, I suppose if that issue is dispositive, as I read the facts, there is no way the Commonwealth can comply with 192-270.1 for the simple reason is they can't prove who actually took the photographs. I know that at trial, the prosecutor attempted to authenticate the photographs pursuant to statute while the police officer was on the witness stand. I'm not sure why he couldn't do that. It wouldn't, you know, certainly wouldn't help with notice if I was a defense lawyer and wanted to look at the photographs prior to court and perhaps find out who took them to do it on the witness stand. But I didn't see anything in the case law that said you couldn't do that. But the police officer said Rodney Vinson took the pictures. Gregory Provo took the stand, said he took them. So their case can't get any better than that. So if 192-270.1 is dispositive of this case, then I would submit to the court that they can't win because they can't say who took the photographs. The evidence is in conflict.
Well, if the evidence is in conflict, why wouldn't the fact finder be able to decide who he believed took the photograph?
Judge, I would submit that the fact finder can always do that, but I think that that's more generally when you have person A on one side, the plaintiff said the light was red and the defendant said the light was green. Here you've got the Commonwealth with conflicting evidence. I think to try and pick who to believe, that was not really delved into, the court would have to speculate as to who to believe. I'll just pick Provost telling the truth and go with that authentication. I don't believe that happened in this case.
Are the photographs necessary for the conviction?
Ma'am?
Are the photographs necessary for the conviction?
No, ma'am. No, ma'am. I will tell you this panel in all candor, that statute has baffled me for years. And the court is the appellate courts are clear that the rules for authenticating photographs are still in place. And Your Honor, you don't need the photograph. I mean, you don't need the photographer. Someone comes in, says they're fair and accurate, and you move on. I was shocked, quite frankly, that this was that big a deal. I don't believe that's the main issue in this case. I hate to concede anything, but I do not believe 192-270.1 is the main issue in this case. And if y'all have any questions about that, I'll be happy to try and answer them.
But you've answered my question.
Yes, ma'am. Turning to what I think may be the better issue is the identity. Now, I think all of us who have tried cases kind of know where this is going, and I think the issue really comes to how close is good enough. Because what we have here, we have prior conviction orders, which are all in all local. They're all from Virginia courts. Now, one of the courts, and I'm not sure that this is really stated in the record, but it's right up the street in Chesapeake. The other one's in Albemarle, which is God's country. I spent some time over there. So, so I would have been happy to go up there and get them had they asked me to do that. But they have to prove in the initial brief in opposition. When I looked over it, not the one Ms. Darren prepared, the prosecutor had indicated that it was by preponderance the identity, and I was kind of taken back at that a little bit. They have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that those orders, because that's an element of this case, that he had prior convictions. Now the names are different, the birth date is the same. The Social Security numbers were off by one number.
And the conviction order from Chesapeake is the same as the final order in this case, the Social Security number, right?
I believe so, yes.
Albemarle is where the two digits are transposed.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So, and one of the orders was kept out, and I didn't go because it appeared that it was a duplicate.
Right.
But the Chesapeake order, I think you were basically focusing on the Albemarle order. And they have, and Judge, I would submit that there are ways, when I first started practicing way back when, it seems anyway, I mean, they used to bring in, they roll the prints. Right in court. You know, we're going to bring Robert Clark in. We'll roll the prints. We're going to examine them right there. We're going to call him as a witness. And that's how they used to do things. And there are ways, I think, when you get a case like this and you say, well, I've got a bad conviction order, you call the defense lawyer, see what he'll do. And if they don't do anything, say, okay, I'm going to roll prints. I'm going to get fingerprint cards from Charlottesville, and don't expect any assist. I mean, you want to, I can throw fast too, so I think that's how that should be handled. But there was none of that here. And now that we have DNA, you know, back in the day it was whether you were secretor or non-secretor. But now that we have DNA, you know, that would be easy enough to get the DNA samples. You can say, okay, I need to get your guy tested. He needs to. I'm going to swab him.
Does it matter really with the name though, because the indictment was amended to say AKA Antonio Barrow as well?
I saw that, Judge. It was, and I wasn't as happy with that. I didn't try the case. I'm not trying to slough it off on, but it was. I would still submit that the Social Security numbers are off. I mean, I suppose you get a presumption with identity of name, but the order from Albemarle, I don't believe, says Hall, a.k.a. Barrow. So we don't know really, and I'll have to double check on that, Judge. But the Portsmouth order does.
It's Judge, Antonio L. Barrow.
Right. So it doesn't say a.k.a. Hall. I guess my thrust is that the burden's on the Commonwealth to do that. And again, what they should have done is to contact Albemarle, get fingerprint cards, or get the, you know, everyone has to have DNA now. So they have DNA, a DNA sample that they can connect to that case. So they could take and swab him, compare the DNA, and say, look, you're the guy. There are ways to do that. And that was not done. I almost felt sorry for the prosecutor as I read the transcript. I sort of got the idea that this is one of those handoffs at the last minute, and I've certainly been there. But, I believe that it is their burden to show. And Your Honor, I don't want to stand up here and pound the table and say it's not close. It is close. I think for me to argue that it's not close would be just wrong. I mean, the Social Security numbers are off a little bit. The birthday's correct. I know which way I would bet, but that's not the standard. You know, which way we would bet. You know, would you bet your house payment? Would you bet the next 6 months' house payment? It's beyond a reasonable doubt. That's something they could have dealt with and didn't. They did not do that. So, do y'all have, Judge, I could keep going. I don't think the argument, I think we've touched on everything that's relevant to this case. If y'all have any questions about that, I'll be happy to try and answer them. Other than that, I will conclude my argument.
I don't have any further questions.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Leah Dion for the Commonwealth. I am not going to take long, but I would like to take an opportunity to touch on a couple of things, a couple of aspects of other counsel's argument. Number one, he places great emphasis on a dispute in the facts as to who took the photograph of the stolen merchandise. And I point the Court to the Eaton versus Commonwealth case in 240 Virginia. It's an old capital case. In that case, that case stands for the proposition that you can have two Commonwealth's witnesses testimony in conflict, and the court is entitled, as the fact finder, to draw inferences from their testimony and to draw the conclusion, the ultimate determination as to whose testimony the court will accept. So in that case, it was an equivocal request for counsel issue, and one officer testified one way and another officer testified another. So in this particular case, the court, as in Eaton, accepted the testimony of one witness, one Commonwealth witness, over the other. So we point the court to that, the fact that there were, so that issue is done with based on the court's conclusion of fact. Of course, the admissibility of evidence is reviewable by this court under an abuse of discretion standard. I believe the case law is clear that the case should be decided on the narrowest ground possible, and I believe defense counsel has conceded this morning that the photograph of the stolen items was admissible under the general rules regarding the admissibility of photographs in criminal cases. I don't think the court needs to get into the admissibility of the photograph of the stolen items under 19270.1. We have argued on brief that all of the elements of that code section were complied with the exception of the last element, which has to do with the fact that the photograph is supposed to be placed in the police file or held by the court, with all this presupposing that all this identifying information that was placed on the back of the photograph at trial would have been placed on the photograph prior to it entering into the court record or the police record. And with regard to that issue in this particular case, the defense doesn't gain any traction, because if he contends that that's a discovery issue for him, the record is clear in this case that trial counsel did not take advantage of the discovery order in place by going to look at that photograph and making and using it as a discovery tool. So we submit that, and finally we submit that the de minimis failure to comply with that very last element. The defense didn't argue that there was some sort of, that he was disadvantaged by the inability of that information not being on the back of the photograph prior to trial. There really is, as he said, no dispute that these items were the stolen items, and the import of that statute really is to allow the items to go back to the owner so that they can be sold and not held in the evidence room. So we submit, for any and all of those reasons, that there is no error with regard to the admission of the photograph. With regard to the...
I'll follow up with you on that, Ms. Darren. Everything that was done in signing the photograph was done in court.
That's
while
right.
The witness was under oath.
That's right.
So that part, presumably, if there was a problem, was cured.
That's right.
But the problem, I gather you're saying, is that it wasn't stored properly before trial. And how can that be cured if you do want, if under 19.2-270.1, or does it matter? Is it a discovery issue? As Mr. Pearsall seemed to imply at trial.
Well, that seems to be it's not exculpatory. So other than it being in the police file or in the court file, holding the stolen merchandise as evidence, the part of the statute that I'm looking at is the part that says the photograph with the foregoing information written upon it under oath shall be filed with the police authority or the court holding the stolen merchandise as evidence, and the merchandise shall be returned to its owner. I don't know that that is a discovery, creates a discovery issue. Other counsel has argued that. It was argued as a basis for excluding the photo in the trial court. As I said, I hope I'm answering your question. In this particular case, if that is a discovery mechanism, he can't complain about it under the facts of this case because he didn't take advantage.
Because it was an open file policy.
Yes, and he never went and looked at it. So if that is what he argues it to be, as was argued in the trial court, he is not entitled to the benefit of a reversal based on that part of the statute because he didn't take advantage of it. And again, he didn't claim any kind of, that he was disadvantaged, which is always an issue when we have a discovery problem. So, I hope that answers the court's question. With regard to the second issue on the prior conviction orders, I point to the record. The indictment at page 4 of the appendix provides the defendant's name as Antonio Hall, a.k.a. Antonio Barrow. He stated under oath, told the court that all of his statements were true, that he was the person charged in the indictment. That's at Appendix 6. And he provided his date of birth also on page 6. That information being Antonio Barrow and the date of birth match the information on the two prior felony orders, which were relied upon to make prior conviction orders, which were relied upon to make this petty larceny crime a felony. The only variance in the case are two digits, an inversion of two digits of the last four digits of the Social Security number. The Commonwealth argued that that was a Scrivener's error. The court accepted that. Again, the admissibility of evidence is reviewed under an abuse of discretion standard, and we submit that this evidence plainly meets that test. Are there any further questions? We ask that the court affirm. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Very briefly, and Judge, the 19.2 270.1 issue, that's one of those, I think, it's just as cut and dried as it gets. They didn't comply. I think it's a discovery issue. He also didn't try to look at them before court. I mean, all of that's out there. They didn't comply. If that's dispositive, I win. So were the photographs admissible under some other theory? Yes. I just don't think I can say anything else. I've done this too long. So that's just how that is. As far as the prior order issue, she's correct when she says, are you the same person charged in the indictment, etc.? That's this indictment. He says, yes, I'm the guy that they caught at Walmart. That's not why we're here. Why we're here is whether or not he was the guy in Chesapeake and Albemarle. I think the court has to start saying how close is close enough. I think that's the issue, the sole issue. If I had to write it on an index card, that would be it. How close is close enough? How close do you have to be? If you have any other questions, I'll be happy to try and answer.
Questions? No, thank you.
Yes.
We'll come down and greet counsel.